Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talk to Dr. Nicola Mercer, the Medical Officer of Health for Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph Public Health. This has become a habit every 3 or 4 months to play host to Dr. Mercer and dedicate an episode of the pod to the latest developments concerning COVID-19 and the global pandemic. While it would be nice to no longer have these conversations now, nearly 1 year after we had Dr. Mercer on the show for the first time to talk about COVID-19, we're now at a critical stage in this pandemic with the rollout of vaccines taking place against the backdrop of what has been an incredible increase in COVID cases at the peak of the second wave. The numbers are now going down, and this week it was announced that the province is reopening. But where does the local medical officer think we stand in the midst of all of this? Catching up on COVID is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, as this week started, the 7-day moving rate of confirmed cases is now just a few points above the red line of 40 per 100,000, while the test positivity rate is now at 3.6%. This is good news, since it was just a month ago that the numbers were 115 per 100,000 and over 5% in that test positivity. According to data presented at the Board of Health meeting last week, the second wave peaked in Wellington, Dufferin, and Guelph on January 9th, and that was before the outbreak at the University of Guelph, which has seen nearly 70 cases, now mostly resolved from a super spreader event on January 15 and 16 weekend. We've also seen a precipitous increase in fatalities from the virus in the last month, which is especially noteworthy since there were months that went by where we had no deaths from COVID-19 in our area at all. Things have changed, though. While delays in receiving vaccines has been a pain, Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph Public Health has completed a full round of first doses for residents of long-term care homes and are now handing out the second doses. Our numbers are steering lower, and there was an announcement on Monday that Ontario will be lifting the state of emergency and lockdown measures in most of the province by this time next week. The hope is that the worst is over, but there are still so many unanswered questions about the road ahead. How quickly can we get more vaccine? How many more vaccines will be approved? When can we ditch the masks? Can we ever ditch the masks? So many questions, so let's get some answers. This week on the Guelph Politicast, we're joined by Dr. Nicola Mercer for the fourth time in the last year as we cover the latest in pandemic and COVID-19 developments. We will address the vaccine delays, how they're affecting the plans of public health, and why we shouldn't be worried about short-term holdups in the deliveries. We will also talk about variants, how we will know if there's a case of one of these variants in the region, and their possible effect on the COVID picture when and if that happens. We also discuss the long-term effects of COVID, like on the people that used to be called long haulers, the reasons we are seeing so much loss of life in our senior population right now, and concerns about vaccine hesitancy as we start giving out shots to younger people. And so, without further ado, I caught up with Dr. Nicola Mercer last week via Zoom. So, Dr. Nicola Mercer, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, as always.
I guess we'll start where we usually start, because I join those Board of Health meetings and, you know, you just pop on and you start giving the facts and no one says, hold on, Dr. Mercer, how are you and your staff doing despite all this? Are you looking after yourselves? Are you feeling well despite all the pressures on you?
I have to say that's been a most remarkable year. And I think for many listeners, they've maybe had a lot of boredom or perhaps alone time over the past year. And yet for those of us in healthcare in particular, and in particularly those of us in public health, I have never had a busier year. And many times I would describe it as overwhelming and a deep longing for some alone time or some quiet time, which we can't get, obviously. But it's been going on a very long time now, more than a year for me personally, because we became aware last January, so January of 2020, that something was happening in Wuhan, China. And we were sort of following it. I wouldn't say we were more observing it from a distance, But we activated our internal IMS, which is our emergency, sort of an incident management system of way that we function. So we activated in January of 2020. And we are still in the same functioning. Now it's changed over the time. It's gotten bigger. We've had to adjust, but we have been working in an emergency format since then. So it's long. My staff are tired. I try to, you can have a day here or there. And I guess for some people, they'd say, well, you get a week's holiday, where can you go anyways right now, right? Which is pretty much nowhere. But still, it is hard. We've had very, very little downtime and very little rest time. So yeah, we look forward with a great deal of anticipation, different probably from others.
Looking back to the days of the biggest things are food recalls and inoculation reports and well water
Yeah.
testing.
And who would have thought that little public health that seemed rather boring would play such an important role?
It's true. I do want to dig into the numbers a little, and granted, they will change between now and when the podcast comes out. But I mean, I think we can, and by all means, you're the expert, but it does seem that we have a trend forming. Because yesterday, Thursday, we're recording this on Friday, the 7 day moving average 74.4 per 100,000. It was over 100 at one point about a month ago. The test positivity is 3.3%. No matter what the numbers are on a daily basis, this is the trend we want to see, is it not?
Yes, and actually, today's numbers, which I've had a just had a peek at, continue that same downward trend. So what we can say, though, is if we look at where the cases are coming from, we still see that we have workplaces and congregate settings. So we still have cases in our long-term care retirement homes. We are just started now. Actually, yesterday we had a little hiccup today because of the snow in our northern communities. We couldn't get to some of our homes today to do their second doses. Oh, we'll try again on the weekend. But we are starting second doses now in our long-term care retirement homes. And once we are done that, and once we can do the staff and hopefully catch, we still have quite a few staff that we have to go back and do. I think it's going to make a difference. So, because if we take away those outbreak numbers, our community numbers look very good. I don't want people, though, who are listening to think, oh, yay, that means we can open and go back to everything we do. I think what we should be thinking about is, yes, we can open, and I have to be just really careful because these variants are out there. They are extraordinarily and different than what we've experienced. In the old days, you could probably get away with 10 minutes of having your mask off and having a coffee. We don't think that you can get away with that now. We think that if you let your guard down, take your mask off, drop your mask, it could only take maybe a few minutes now for you to get the new COVID variants that are circulating when they become the dominant variant. That's why they're becoming the dominant variant, right? It's because they are so much more readily passed person to person. So yeah, I'm looking forward to a little bit more easement of the rules, but that doesn't mean that we can drop our public health measures. We each and every one of us have to be very, very vigilant.
I do want to get to the variants, but I do want to go over the numbers just a bit more. Can you just confirm so people can hear it in your own voice? I wrote about it, the public health meeting, but all the residents of the area long-term care homes and the retirement homes have gotten their first shot, at least their first shot now. Yes.
Yes, so all of our residents had their first shot. When I say all, it's a little over 90%. At the time that we went through the homes, there were a few people that didn't have consent from family members, a few people that were ill, and we've had a few people move into the homes. So we know that we have to pick up a few more people, but the vast majority of residents have had their first shot. And everyone right now, our plan is to have everybody done, weather permitting, by February 24th will be the second shots for all of our residents.
And since you mentioned workplaces, and I know there's the Cargill plant on Watson Parkway that's now having, let's say, outbreak issues. I think one of the things we understand from your explanation, the way the provincial rollout is happening, the focus is on long-term care, healthcare workers. But just now, when you were talking about where the outbreaks are, you said workplaces. And I'm wondering, perhaps, not that you should rewrite provincial policy right here on the fly, but I mean, it should would there be an immediate focus on workplaces, places like the meat processing plants, where there seems to be a lot of COVID floating around just by its nature of people working on the line right next to each other? Should we be maybe reprioritizing that a bit?
No, well, it's a great question, and certainly a question that the province and those leaders who are thinking about sequencing a vaccine really struggle with, because we have many people in our communities who we wish to have the vaccine today, you know, not in the future. And yet we don't have the vaccine supplies. So in a future state, and I do believe that we will see a state where all of a sudden we get large amounts of vaccine. Mm. So in a future state, it's how quickly can we get it into people's arms? And perhaps at that point in time, the prioritization becomes a little less meaningful if the difference is I might have to wait a couple days to get my shot versus weeks to months. What we do know is that the prioritization is very important when we have a limited supply. So we are prioritizing those who are most at risk. And so you are correct, long-term care home, retirement home residents, the staff, the essential caregivers who are going in and out of these homes all the time to look after their loved ones, as well as high-risk front-facing hospital workers. So we haven't mm-hmm. finished them yet. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be another group that we need to pick up. And I believe that there's also the need for people in their communities who are on home care, those who are the most fragile. Some of those people are actually waiting to go into long-term care homes. So we need to pick those people up as well. After that, that's a bit of a provincial decision. A lot of people are looking at that now. But the more vaccine we have, the less important the sequence becomes, right? Because everybody will be able to get it in a fairly short turnaround time.
And I suppose we should note, it's not just like quantity of the two approved vaccines, but if there are more therapeutic regimens generally, like if the Johnson & Johnson vaccine gets approved, or the AstraZeneca one, or whatever other vaccines are coming down the pipe, more, whether it's amounts or variety, is what we're looking for.
I'm assuming that the first one will be the AstraZeneca in Canada. I don't know when that one will be approved, but it could be fairly soon, actually. I don't know what their supplies are like or when we might see AstraZeneca flowing. That's a little bit different vaccine. And then you're right, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine would be quite a different vaccine, because it would be a single dose vaccine. Right. And where we would deploy that vaccine, which population, I think those are all questions that need to be answered. And there's a lot of people working on them. It's not, and a lot of countries, not just Canada, thinking about this, but a lot of countries are looking at these vaccines and the where and when to deploy them.
The other thing that was, when I was looking at the numbers last night, that is concerning, and I imagine it's concerning for you too, is the number of fatalities we're seeing from the virus. I think until October there was about 37, and then we started seeing that number go up again. And you know, but considering that we had months where no one had been dying from the virus, and then since you know the end of October, November, December, January, we've seen that number double. And then knowing from your presentation at Board of Health, like those are our seniors. I guess is there more that we could be doing to round that number, to sort of stop these losses of our older population? Is it just a matter of, you know, keeping up the public health measures, or is there something more we could be doing on that end specifically?
A really interesting question. So I think specifically those who are over the 80 years of age, they are extremely vulnerable and for hospitalization and death. And the province is aware of that. And I'm anticipating that we will hear news over the next little while that will say that we can't really wait. We need to try and immunize this population. We have done the homes, but what about the ones who are living in our community that are most at risk? But I think for everybody who's listening, if you are over the age of 60, 65, you really need to take this seriously. This is not the time to be, you know, taking multiple trips to the dollar store or going to the pharmacy, the supermarket. Every time you leave your house, you're putting yourself at risk. We don't have a long time to wait right now. We really are talking about 2 to 3 months Okay, we're not talking about years. You've gone so long, so far. Please be really careful right now. There's, you know, it would be so sad for your families if you don't make it to get your vaccine because you were exposed. And for people who have loved ones in their family, this is not the time to visit your aunts, uncles, grandparents, parents if they're older. You know, we know that we love them. We know we want to care for them. I care for my in-laws. You know, you can do their groceries. You can put it on their step. You can wave to them. You can communicate with them virtually. You could see them from a distance. You can make sure they're fine. But do everything you can to make sure that they get their opportunity to get a vaccine, because if they get COVID, and especially with the new variant circulating right now, they're very vulnerable, and we all can do more to protect these individuals.
And maybe the onus is on us to check up on our neighbors who are seniors, and to make sure they're not taking those trips to the grocery store or the dollar store unnecessarily.
Yeah, I think so. As I said, sometimes people don't want help, or sometimes people like to take the trips themselves. But there's a lot of services right now, as we all know, for online delivery. A lot of times this age group can't really do that, though. So some places do have, some pharmacies will deliver if you make a call. So whatever we can do to help our population make it to the vaccine point, we know these vaccines, what they're really good at is preventing severe disease and death. Mm-hmm. So that's like what we really want: severe disease and death to be gone. I think none of us would be too afraid of this particular virus if we thought, okay, well, all right, I'm going to get a bad cold, or I'm going to get like the flu. I'm going to maybe have a fever, and I'll be in bed for a day. We would all go, okay, all right, that's done. You know, I can live with that. But none of us want to be hospitalized, put on a ventilator, or die. And unfortunately, you just don't know when you roll the die. We've all seen young people, sadly, that 19-year-old. I mean, 19, that is such a young age. So let's not assume just because you're young that you won't have a really bad time of it. And long COVID is also something that people don't talk about. The people who have COVID but don't really quite fully recover, and months later, they're still having symptoms. So you're a healthy 24-year-old athlete. Yeah, you know, you might want to think twice about getting COVID, because you might have those long symptoms afterwards. And we don't know who gets it and why some people do and some people don't.
Well, and that's going to be one of the things we're going to be dealing with in the long term, is what are the long-term consequences of people who've gotten full-blown COVID. The long haulers, which I think you were kind of alluding to, the people who have it for months and months and months and can't seem to shake it, even after the usual 14-day period. That, I mean, these are sort of the big medical questions that you're going to be struggling to answer, and researchers are going to be struggling to answer in 22, 23, 24, and onward into the future.
Yeah, exactly. And the new name is long COVID. And so, yeah, we used to call them long haulers, and that's a great name, but they're calling them long COVID. And you're right. There's a lot about this pandemic. I mean, I'm certain that it is going to change not just healthcare, but many of our societal directions and things that we do, and perhaps government initiatives and directions as well, too, as we realize, for example, PPE was such a challenge because we didn't make any in Canada. And I'm really so pleased to be able to say that we have a plant now in Cambridge that makes a lot of PPE, and another one in Waterloo, things that weren't in place a year ago. So these are really important that we maintain them, and that we as healthcare institutions and as a society, we have to support our own industry so that when this happens again, we're not in the same place that we were.
Right. That's, I think, going to be an important lesson, is having that capacity, not trusting the supply chain as much, because, you know, you never know what might happen. Speaking of never know, I do want to talk about the variants. And I guess, first of all, if there was a case of any of the, I know there's the two particular that are in Ontario, there's the third one from Brazil that is offshore waiting to waiting for someone to catch it, if we're thinking about it that way. But If there were to be a case of one of the variants in Wellington Dufferin Guelph, how would you know? Like, what are kind of the warning signs there? And I guess scientifically, how do you confirm it too, that it's one of the variants and not just sort of regular COVID?
Yeah, great question. So until we knew that they were there, we weren't particularly looking for them, for example. But now that we know that we're there in Ontario, that our lab system is looking for them. The thing about the variants is that we have to assume they're here. They're here and we haven't found them. So the public health labs in Ontario has been looking, and they did a point prevalence study recently, sort of looking at what we know in the community of all the samples that are positive, as well as the outbreaks. And so when we have these really bad outbreaks, what we saw in Simcoe Muskoka, yeah, it was a variant, and that was most of our variant cases really are right now associated with outbreaks. But interestingly, we did discover just in this one, what they call a point prevalence, let's just pick one point in time and look, we did see about 1% or a little bit more than 1% of our samples were testing positive for, and I'm going to call it the B117 variant. We're not really supposed to be calling them by the countries they came from, but that was first discovered in the United Kingdom, so you can put the two together. But that variant is the one that seems to be circulating more widely than the B1351, which was first found in South Africa. So yeah, so that one is hopefully we will maybe be able to contain these variants. But I think most people realize that they're because they seem to transmit more easily, that they quickly become the dominant variant. So we haven't found any locally, not yet. But I do think, as I said at the board meeting, that we must assume that it's here. We have checked, for example, we've had some outbreaks that we've checked. We've sent samples for the for see if it's been the variant, and so far we haven't seen it. And for the next 2 weeks, the Public Health Ontario labs are going to be looking at all positive samples. They're going to try and do genetic sequencing and look to see if they're positive. So for 2 weeks, all samples, and then it's a huge job to do. And then after that, I think they're going to be looking at sort of 10% of all of the samples to see what we can find for variants. So we are going to find a lot more information, and I think you'll hear a lot more about variants over the next couple of weeks.
How long does it take to genetically sequence a sample?
You know, that's a great question, and I think it's quite a number of days,
Okay.
and for some reason about 5 to 7 or 7 to 10 days sticks in my mind. So it is not something that we our turnaround time is that quick, which is why the point prevalence study, which was done in January, I think January 24th, was just released yesterday.
Was there a concern that the outbreak at U of G and the residences there was a variant, because that seemed to just come in and, lay down like dozens of students at once. And it kind of hasn't been, they've had a couple of new cases this week, but I mean, because it's more than 2 weeks after that super spreader event now. But I mean, it just seemed like one day there was no outbreak, and then the next day there was, 12 students sick.
Yeah, well, but then let's just look at what those students were actually doing. So I think it's more about the behavior. So they were all gathered without masks in a tight room, close quarters, coming and going multiple days. We know if you want to get COVID, you go to a party, take your mask off, and sort of socialize like we normally did. Like that is the absolute perfect way to get COVID. So when you put any case in a room with lots of people, of course we had lots of cases. So I don't think there was anything special particularly about that, but I think it really pointed to the behaviors that were occurring. People were having drinks, they were spending lots of time together, they were in townhouses, which are not overly large, and so they were also mingling. I suspect there was a little bit more than just mingling that might have been going on, and therefore there was a lot of viral swapping, shall we say, in those events. And yeah, and it's that's not the first one. I think that anytime we would do that with any age group, we've seen that in multiple events all across Ontario. People think they can get away with it, whether it's a wedding where it's more controlled, We've had, we've definitely had the one at Western, now DFG, lots of examples. So I know for your audience, if you think you could get away with it, you really can't. And I know that if you get caught, it's super expensive right now. I mean, I know that last weekend they handed out fines in Guelph over $10,000 worth of fines. So is it really worth it to be, to be hit with a huge fine? You can probably get a, you could probably have your party in like 3 or 4 months outside with everybody vaccinated. Like I think maybe wearing masks, but I think that we're not that far away from the ability to gather in a way that we all want to do.
Spring is a little over a month away at this point. Hearing you talk about gathering together, it makes me think about Reading Week, which is next week. And I guess what's the best advice for students who may be thinking about going home? So just, don't go home, or if you can at all help it.
Yeah, this is tough advice because I recognize that a lot of the students are, you're 18, 19, 20, like you're young and you're bored and you can't see your friends and you don't know what to do, and this year is not going anything like what you had thought, especially if you're in first year university, or even if you're in second year, even your first year of university, when if you're now in second year, didn't go as you planned because it finished with a very different way of being. So I really do get it. But I also want to give you a different perspective. If you take it back, if you by chance have this, and if you take it back to your family, you could unwittingly harm them, especially depending on their age, or they could take it into their workplaces, or they could take it to somebody else. So it's a very tough message, but I think I'm just really saying, let's try and get everyone to the finish line. We all care about, I care about my parents, deeply care about them. I haven't seen them from, I saw them from a distance in October. It's tough. My parents are older. They may not be around a lot longer. For students who are listening, I know you love your parents. The most loving thing that you can do for your parents right now is to not go home.
And again, that's another one of those things where, students will have to go home in a couple of months anyway, once the school year is done. So,
That is true, but I am hoping for large amounts of vaccine,
well, that's,
certainly starting in April. I mean, unless, I mean, we never know about whatever is happening with other countries and our supply chain, but I think we can all realize that in April we will be immunizing a lot more people in our society, and probably maybe even towards the end of March. And if we can get our older members of society, in particular, immunize those over the age of anybody over the age of 60 or 65, we will be in a much safer place. And I do know that that you want to go home, and you will probably go home. But there are ways that we can do that, and when we get closer to that, maybe the conversation is, "I want to go home. Tell me how I can go home safely."
We've been kind of tap dancing around it, but I mean, I watch the news every night, being a newsie myself. But it seems like there's a lot of hand-wringing about the vaccine distribution and about the delays when we hear, Moderna's cutting the shipment for next week, or Pfizer's not delivering vaccines next week. Are we making a bit too much of that? Like, are we like just so focused on the immediate term that we're not, thinking about when the government says, and when public health says, we still plan on being able to get this number of population vaccinated by this point in time? Are we too short-sighted again when it comes to this kind of schedule and things?
I think we all want it done yesterday. No one more than me. I really want this pandemic to end. And I know we all do that. We all see the vaccines. And so it's like somebody's dangling something in front of us and says, you can't quite get there. You can't quite have this. So I think that it makes people angry. It makes people perhaps that sense of loss, longing. We're all kids playing in a sandbox and realizing that the sandbox beside us has something that we don't have. But we can't control that. We can only really control the variables that are currently in our lives. So what we can say is we will get our vaccine. We will get it. We are not, sadly, one of the developing nations who might have to wait a year or more to get a vaccine. We will have our vaccines, and we will have lots of vaccines when they come. So the goal really is to focus on, I know this is tough, but it's not going to last forever. Let's just do these public health measures. Let's make sure that our parents, our grandparents, the people that we love are going to be there with us when this is over. Let's have Christmas in August or whatever we do to celebrate the end of this. But we want everybody around that table. And the way we're going to get there is by doing the right things now and just we will. Okay, it's been delayed by a few weeks, maybe a month or so, but I would prefer it wasn't. I would prefer that I was giving needles now, but it's not. And when the time comes, we in public health are getting ready. We are really focused on trying to have a plan in place along with many partners, family health team partners, municipal partners, the university is also a partner to say when we get it, we will be able to put needles in arms very quickly and to get our population first doses. So get ready, be willing to roll up your sleeve, everyone. I think that is what you can do. Protect your parents, protect your grandparents, get your shot when the time comes. I'm definitely getting mine.
I want to gaze into the crystal ball a bit. And you kind of, again, you kind of addressed this at the Board of Health meeting, but you did say it's there's not going to be like a victory over COVID day where we can like ceremoniously throw away our masks and our hand sanitizer and that we can go back to, I guess, life in February 2020. I guess. And we did kind of talk about this in one of our previous interviews before, but I think you kind of have a more firmer sense of it now, just from what you said at the Board of Health meeting. Even as we vaccinate, given the fact that this virus has mutated in so many different ways so quickly, masks are kind of here to stay. But is that fair to say?
Well, I don't want people to give up hope that we're going to have to wear masks in schools and forever. I think what we should be saying is masks are probably here to stay for the majority of 2021. And I think part of that is the research. So one of the things we haven't answered the question on is if I have my vaccine and I've had two doses or whatever, and I get COVID or I'm in contact with COVID, do I become an asymptomatic shedder? Meaning, do I actually pass it along to others? Most of the time, when we vaccinate people from disease, it prevents you from getting the disease. And so, therefore, you don't give it to anybody else. So, we need to answer that question. And we don't really have the answer to that question. Most likely, the answer is going to be probably the worst case scenario is going to be that we shed less. I mean, that's probably going to be the worst case scenario is that if we get it, we shed less. But maybe we don't shed at all. And if that's the case, and if we can prove that, or we can confirm that, unless you're extremely up close and personal, like unless there's a very low load that you cannot infect somebody, that it will be that will be the ticket to say, if I can't infect anybody, then I don't actually need to wear a mask. I'm no longer a threat to people around me. So that information is going to come. It's going to come this year. I mean, we have, as we've been immunizing millions of people around the world, we will have the answer to that question. And then that's going to really drive what happens. And also, the other biggest factor is, are people going to get the vaccine? If only 60% of us get this vaccine, we are going to have a really hard time taking our masks off because there's going to be a lot of people out there shedding the virus still, because this virus isn't going away anytime soon, as you can see. So it is really important that everyone considers their role in not just in protecting themselves, but in protecting the people around us that we love.
I was thinking about that too. I was thinking especially about who's getting the vaccine right now, and it's our older population. It's people over 70, 80, people who might remember a day when there was no measles vaccine, when there was no chickenpox vaccine, when there was no polio vaccine. And getting vaccine was that was a great thing because it meant you were not going to suffer and get sick. And so these are kind of the people who you would think would be the most ready willing, able, and eager to get vaccinated. It's going to be tougher when we start to get into the younger generations, is it not? The invincibles, you know, I think we call them.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I hate to admit it, but I'm a pre-measles child. So yeah, I had to have measles because the vaccine was very new and not widely distributed when I was growing up. So yeah, unfortunately, it's not pleasant when you have to get a disease. And studies do show that older people are a little bit more likely to say, yep, I'm going to get this vaccine. But I think for those who are my younger crowd who are thinking, yeah, I don't really need to get it. I think I'd say a couple things. Consider long COVID. Mm. Consider what that might do to your life. And that would be one thing. Consider the limitations it might put on you if you don't choose to be vaccinated. And for example, it is possible that some workplaces will require you to be immunized in order to work there, especially in a more crowded workplace. It is also possible and probable that countries won't let you enter unless you have proof of vaccination. So you want to go on that, you know, trip to Cuba for, you know, your week's vacation. And what if Cuba says, I'm sorry, you can't enter unless you show proof of vaccination. So I think as a world, we're going to grapple with these things. But the number one reason why I'm saying to those of you who are over the age of 16 to get vaccinated is, you know, please protect your parents. Please protect your grandparents, because we know that young people can be asymptomatic and can shed it to others. And you don't want to have that guilt of knowing that you were the one that gave it to your parents and they had a poor outcome. And so I'm just saying that if you don't care about yourself, I know we all care about giving it to those that we love. So that's when I say, please roll up your sleeve and get your shot.
I do think that is persuasive, but I also think it is, given what you're saying about long COVID, I think is also persuasive. It could be a thing, like, we're not going to see people walking around in leg braces like back in the days of polio. But I mean, if you're on a ventilator and your lungs are all scarred from coughing for 2 weeks, I mean, that's ruining your own health. You know, maybe you have a hobby you enjoy, like, you know, an athletic sport you play. Maybe you play it somewhat professionally at university or whatever. That's a persuasive argument too, I think, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and it's not even being on a ventilator. What we have seen is from certain healthy young people is, yeah, they don't require being on a ventilator, but they just have a very bad case of COVID, and then they seem to have especially long-standing symptoms, whether respiratory symptoms, and there's a lot we don't know, so I'm not going to speculate, but it is pretty well documented now that there are individuals who, although they recover and they're doing fine, that they never recover back to their previous level of fitness, for example, or there. And so athletes out there, yeah, you should care a lot about this, because that could really derail. And even if you're not an athlete, you're a weekend athlete. I mean, who wants to have your weekend activities or your things that you enjoy in your life to be potentially impacted by a virus when we have the power now with our new vaccines to be able to do something about it?
Well, that's, as always, great advice. I hope people take it seriously. And I hope we don't have to have a spring COVID check-in, Dr. Mercer, but I have a feeling we might have to. But we will leave that there for today. So
hope it's a happy one. I hope we're talking about lots of vaccines at that point.
Well, that I will join you in that hopeful optimism. But thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, you're most welcome, Adam.
And once again, that was Dr. Nicola Mercer. You can visit Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph Public Health at their website, wdgpublichealth.ca, for up-to-date information about the pandemic and the latest public health advice. You can look for further guidance about the reopening of the local economy to be released sometime later this week, and you can find that coverage on Guelph Politico. And that is it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or you can download it from Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. When you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays as well. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. You can reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. You can go to Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, whether it's about COVID or not, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, we will see you next time.